According to those in power, America suffers from an information disorder. But don't worry, the Biden administration says it has the cure. But I'm telling you, if it's allowed to use the machine that they have just built, voices of dissent will be throttled, gagged, or even gone by the time the election arrives. Tonight, I will show you what they have built. Hello, America. I want to talk to you tonight about free speech. Who decides what speech is allowed and which isn't? To have and maintain this vital First Amendment right, you must put up with a lot of truly evil garbage. People say and write and promote the worst stuff. They abuse this amazing freedom that we have because they don't realize their responsibility. You can say a lot of things, but maybe you shouldn't. That's just the reality. Often civil people easily disagree on what speech is horrible. And then in the marketplace of ideas, that horrible speech gets pushed to the fringes. But to keep this marketplace truly open, you have to deal with a constant barrage of stuff you disagree with. In this online social media age, governments all around the world, and especially our own, are struggling hard to do with the onslaught of speech that counters the government's agenda. It's a little like when Galileo said, no, no, look at the heavens, and the church said, no, look at us. Some of what's going on that I'm going to talk about tonight may be a semi-good faith effort by some people in government agencies to really figure out how to deal with the truly evil stuff. We are a nation that is in real trouble, and I don't want to assign bad feelings to everyone involved. But when it comes to the Biden administration, the proof is in the pudding. Not Joe Biden's special pudding, you know, where they smash up the pills and give it to him, but I digress. I'm talking about who they consider and what they consider real threats to democracy, the specific viewpoints and speech that they target. They are casting a very wide net to try to deal with some genuinely bad stuff, but they're scooping up legitimate speech in the process. It just happens to be legitimate speech that they disagree with. There's an important case before the Supreme Court right now, Murphy versus Missouri. The oral argument was just last week, and I want to recap it just a bit. The case involves the Biden administration pressuring social media companies to block views that the White House objects to on topics like the COVID origins. We still don't know what the truth is. The masks. Well, we have a disagreement on the masks, but now we know what the truth is. Vaccines, lockdowns, the Hunter Biden laptop, climate change, mail-in voting, and election integrity. That's a pretty wide net there. Team Biden sought to censor free speech even when the social media companies knew that the suppressed information was true. In the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, their ruling last September, the judges wrote, and I quote, "Privately, the officials were not shy in their requests. They asked the platforms to remove posts ASAP and accounts immediately and to slow down or demote content. In doing so, the officials were persistent and angry. When the platforms did not comply, officials followed up by asking why posts were still up, stating, how does something like this happen? What good is flagging if it didn't result in content moderation? I don't know why you guys can't figure this out. And you're hiding the ball while demanding assurances that posts were being taken down. And more importantly, officials threatened both expressly and implicitly to retaliate against inaction," end quote. That's pretty serious violation of the First Amendment. In addition to the White House, the FBI, the CDC, and the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency all engaged this pressure campaign against social media companies. According to the amicus brief filed by the Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression, quote, various government officials became so entangled with social media platform moderation policies that they were able to effectively rewrite the platform's policies from the inside. It seems clear, as the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals judges concluded, the Biden administration violated the First Amendment by meddling with what should be content moderation decisions made by private companies. Yet, the Biden administration appealed this case all the way to the Supreme Court because, and this is honestly hysterical, you can't write this stuff, they argue that their free speech is actually being violated here. And during an oral argument last week, at least one Supreme Court justice seemed to agree with Team Biden. Here's Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson. Listen.
So my biggest concern is that your view has the First Amendment hamstringing the government in significant ways in the most important time periods. Can you help me? Because I'm really worried about that, because you've got the First Amendment operating in an environment of threatening circumstances from the government's perspective, and you're saying that the government can't interact with the source of those problems.
Okay, a couple of things. I did a whole monologue explaining how the Constitution and the Bill of Rights works on radio earlier this week, because there's a possibility she is honestly struggling and doesn't understand that hamstringing the government is the whole point of the First Amendment. In fact, all of the amendments. The government cannot prohibit freedom of speech, period. As interpreted by the Supreme Court over time, this applies across a board, very limited exceptions: defamation, genuine threats, fraud. Second, there is no emergency exemption clause in the Constitution. It applies at all times. So unless the speech falls under one of the Supreme Court's very limited exceptions, it must be allowed, even if the nation is in some sort of threatening circumstance, as she put it. Otherwise, what would stop a government or a president from declaring something like a national climate emergency and then censor and stop all speech that fails to prop up climate alarmism? I would say, crap, I just gave them a good idea, but crap, they've already had that idea. The Constitution was designed by people who were absolutely set against centralized government power. But from the earliest progressives through Justice Jackson, the left has always been convinced of the opposite, that the good experts in government will be able to filter through the speech righteously and determine the bad speech from the good speech, or the mis or disinformation from the good speech that you're allowed to engage in. The left is very concerned about you. They are very concerned that Americans have to think the correct way. Listen to this from Jen Easterly in 2021. Now, she is the director of the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency at the Department of Homeland Security.
We're in the business of critical infrastructure, and the most critical infrastructure is our cognitive infrastructure. And so building that resilience to misinformation and disinformation, I think, is incredibly important. And we're going to work with our partners in the private sector and throughout the rest of the government and at the department to continue to ensure that the American people have the facts that they need to help protect our critical infrastructure.
Right, right. Do you remember when we voted for her? No, I don't either, because we didn't. And they're everywhere now, making new rules and regulations on what can and cannot be said. And they're doing it with the private sector, a partnership that used to be called, in old school speak, fascism. Any American who values free thought and free speech should squirm at the head of a government agency that you most likely have never even heard of, talking about our cognitive infrastructure. That's this. That's what you think. Now, it reminds me of former Obama White House official Cass Sunstein. He's one of the most dangerous men on freedom of speech I've seen in a long, long time. The idea he promoted of cognitive infiltration, he insisted that government agents or hired private parties should infiltrate extremist groups online and undermine conspiracy theories or other alleged disinformation that the government might not approve of. Sunstein is an amazing guy. That speech went on to say that even if it turns out to be right, the government should do it. Sunstein's wife, she's Samantha Power. Now, she happens to be the head now of USAID, the Agency for International Development. What the hell does that mean? International development, aid to international development, I guess helping other economies grow. Well, in 2021, USAID produced an 88-page document for internal use only titled Disinformation Primer. It is a handbook of sorts with strategies for dealing with disinformation. We only know about it because of an FOIA request and eventually a lawsuit brought by American First Legal. And to be fair, the disinformation primer appears to have been completed before Samantha Power became the head of USAID. But it's ironic that she's now in charge of the agency because this primer is essentially her husband's concept of cognitive infiltration, just on a much broader scale. By the way, USAID is known by most people in the world as an arm of the CIA. The disinformation primer provides a vital look behind the curtain at what the executive branch agencies are up to, especially in light of Murthy versus Missouri, the Supreme Court case I told you about a few minutes ago. It defines a problem that it calls information disorder. What is it? Well, I'll tell you. It is. Defines it as, quote, a condition in which truth and facts coexist in a milieu of misinformation and disinformation, conspiracy theories, lies, propaganda, and half-truths. It's information disorder. They call it a wicked problem. What's a wicked problem? Well, a problem that is difficult and complex, such as poverty or climate change. And without naming any specific names, it later declares part of this wicked problem is that, and I quote, the alternative media ecosystem has become a prominent driver of disinformation. You know, like I said when I said they were going to go after your natural gas stoves. No, they're not doing that. That's disinformation. Now, surely they're not including Blaze TV as a part of this scary alternative media ecosystem. But just when you get your hopes up that, oh, wait a minute, maybe they're not talking about you, the primer includes this handy little chart listing the 10 types of mis and disinformation. And satire and parody are on the list. But apparently it's talking about only the wrong kind or the wrong kind of satire or parody, because there is apparently a right parody and satire. You never know, you know. You never know who will be labeled. I know they'll never label Saturday Night Live as disinformation, but everybody else, you should be a little concerned. Even though back in 2008, the media credited Tina Fey's parody of Sarah Palin with helping get Barack Obama elected, which brings us to one of the many dangerous aspects of life under the Biden administration, the broad definition of terms like dangerous speech. How does the primer define it? Well, quote, any form of expression, speech, text, or image that can increase the risk that its audience will condone or participate in violence against members of another group. Well, I mean, wasn't John Hinckley, didn't he try to kill Ronald Reagan because of taxi driver? I mean, this is ridiculous. People can be negatively inspired by the most random, innocuous things. Under their definition, basically anything can be construed as dangerous speech, and that is by design. By the way, in its dangerous speech section, The primer cites an organization called the Dangerous Speech Project. Well, what's that? Well, let's just say under this project's left-wing funders are George Soros's Tides and Open Society Foundations. Because, of course, they are totally neutral. Now, there's more to show you from the disinformation primer, including something called pre-bunking that you need to know about, and I'll talk about that next. Let me go back to the disinformation primer, put together by the U.S. Agency for International Development. Again, it's all, the only reason why we know it is because of a FOIA effort from American First Legal. The primer strongly prioritizes what's called media literacy. It's only mentioned 33 times in an 88-page primer, so no big deal. They seem very concerned that, quote, online news platforms have disrupted the traditional media landscape. Think of how arrogant this next line is. Government officials and journalists are not the sole information gatekeepers anymore. So, as such, citizens require a new level of information or media literacy to evaluate the veracity of claims made on the internet. According to the primer, media literacy is, quote, the most important factor in identifying false and misleading news. Certainly, it would be better if Americans knew how to discern between a Russia propaganda news website and an established reputable news source. But who decides what's reputable? Are we expected to believe these other news sources like ABC, NBC, CNN that have lied to us over and over and over again, who have their own intelligence operatives inside the government feeding them things from intelligence agencies that we know are trying to manipulate our cognitive ability? Media literacy can easily just be censorship under another name. And the primer says, and I quote, efforts to get media literacy into the curriculum of primary and secondary schools on a broad scale are considered best practice. Now, I wonder how that's going in America. Have you heard? Have you heard of the organization named NewsGuard, which attempts to give news sites reliability ratings? An analysis by the Media Research Center found that NewsGuard rates left and left-leaning news outlets an average of 27 points higher than conservative news outlets. But never mind that. I'm sure NewsGuard's ratings are perfectly fair and balanced. Anyway, NewsGuard also has its own media literacy program for schools. And that's all thanks to a partnership with the ever-so-lovable Microsoft. NewsGuard's browser extension, which will warn your child when they've veered into a news site that they might think is bad. It's being used now by over 800 libraries around the world. Remember, the libraries, whose head of the Library Association is an avowed Marxist. In 2022, NewsGuard partnered with the American Federation of Teachers. That's the second largest teachers union in the U.S. They wanted to get their media literacy program and browser extension into thousands of schools. Now, the people who wanted to shut down the schools because the kids were so dangerous to the old teachers, how are we supposed to believe anything that is endorsed by President Randy Weingarten and think that it's unbiased, much less a mediacy, literacy program for students? I mean, the AFT has a page on their website showcasing Biden-Harris accomplishments. That doesn't exactly sound neutral. In the fight against disinformation, media literacy is one key to what USAID's disinformation primer says is an urgent need to put in place preventative measures. Now, another key emphasized in the primer is something called pre-bunking. They quote a woman who is named Joan Donovan. She's an influential driver of pre-bunking. Donovan was the co-founder of InterOccupy, the organizing group of the broader Occupy Wall Street movement. Oh, that sounds good. She was also a widely quoted denier of the truth of the Hunter Biden laptop. But I'm sure her politics has no bearing on her work as a disinformation expert. Donovan defines pre-bunking as, quote, an offensive strategy that refers to anticipating what disinformation is likely to be repeated by politicians, pundits, and provocateurs during key events and having already prepared a response based on past fact checks. The primer firmer adds that, quote, pre-bunking is drawn from inoculation theory, which seeks to explain how an attitude or a belief can be protected against persuasion, and people can build up an immunity to mis- or disinformation. My gosh, we are dealing with people manipulating every aspect of your mind. The director of Social Decision Making Lab at Cambridge University explains how this works.
So our current measures often revolve around debunking and fact-checking. We're trying to undo the damage when it's already done. And we know from lots of research in cognitive science that it's very difficult to correct information once people have already been exposed to a falsehood. And this is what we call the continued influence of misinformation. Once you're exposed to a falsehood, it settles in your memory. It makes friends with other things that you know to be true. And people tend to retrieve false info from their memory even when they acknowledge a correction. And so pre-bunking, trying to preemptively protect people before that damage occurs, is much more effective than debunking. So what the media described as a psychological vaccine against fake news is really based on the psychological theory of inoculation. So just as injecting yourself with a weakened dose of a virus triggers the production of antibodies to help protect you from future infection, you can do the same with information. By preemptively injecting people with a severely weakened dose of fake news or with an example of the techniques that are used to manipulate people, people can build up cognitive antibodies or intellectual antibodies against misinformation and become more resistant to it when they're targeted in the real world.
This is beyond 4D chess. This is a psychological weapon being developed and promoted by our own government. They will decide what is true, and then they will inoculate you and manipulate you. So if you hear something else that disagrees with that, you'll dismiss it. The guy you just heard from, Professor van der Linden, oversees the Social Decision-Making Lab at Cambridge University, which has a working partnership with the Department of Homeland Security Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. Another key partner in this pre-bunking psychological inoculation project is Jigsaw, which is a unit of Google. When the unit began in 2010, it went by the name of Google Ideas. It was started, as one report described it, quote, to try out ideas that address the challenges of counterterrorism, inter-radicalism, and non-proliferation. So Google hired Jared Cohen as the director of this new unit. At the time, Cohen was the Assistant Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton. Okay. The New York Times, the profile they did on him, called him the public face of 21st century statecraft. In 2009, while he was at the State Department, Cohen controversially convinced the then Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey to delay scheduled maintenance on a site so Iranian protesters could continue communicating during their election uprising. Cohen later said he made the move to Google Ideas because there are, and I quote, things the private sector can do that the U.S. government cannot. But how much more can they do when they all work together? In 2016, Google Ideas changed its name to Jigsaw. They debuted a new tool known as the redirect method. This tool, quote, places ads in the search results and the social media feeds of users who are searching for pre-identified terms that we have associated with one online particular harm. Those ads in the search results then redirect the user to content that provides constructive alternative messages. Jigsaw's partner in developing the redirect method was a British company called Moonshot. Moonshot also has partnered on projects with the U.S. State Department. Initially, Jigsaw and Moonshot's redirect method was hyped as a way to target potential ISIS recruits. But shortly after it launched in 2016, the co-founder of Moonshot said phase two of the redirect tool would target right-wing extremists in the U.S. I just want you to understand, this is multiple government agencies working with private corporations to change your mind and change the argument of all Americans that disagree with the government. If that's not a clear warning sign, I don't think you're going to get a bigger one. By 2021, Jigsaw announced that it had advanced the redirect method to pre-bunking. And it said that, according to its own studies, pre-bunking works in keeping people from adopting extremist views. What are those views? I would imagine views like mine. These are companies that have partnerships with U.S. and British government agencies working on advanced technology to steer public opinion. Now, in a sane world, you could see how a tool like this might be a good thing in helping to disrupt recruiting efforts by actual terrorists. But no, they've redefined what terrorists and what extremists are. The real danger here is who gets to decide what needs redirecting or pre-bunking. And after they really master this, will you even know you've been manipulated? The question that I have talked about for years, that I didn't understand back in the mid-90s when I first saw it discussed, is the disappearance of freedom of choice. Will you even know if that choice that you just made was made by you or made by you because someone else has manipulated you? Who decides what's an extremist? Who decides what's a terrorist or a danger to our republic? We've seen the answer to these questions in word and deed from the Biden administration.
Donald Trump and the MAGA Republicans represent an extremism that threatens the very foundations of our republic.
Okay, we'll come back in a minute with more things that you need to know from the disinformation primer, plus an update on a secretive group I told you about earlier this year. Next. Every time I'm on with you, at least lately, I've asked you to pray for the country. Pray that the Lord recognizes that there are some people that will try to do his will, to beg for forgiveness for all the things that we've done. We have to be people of merit. And one way to do that, I think, is to help save his children. God loves all of his children. Since Roe versus Wade was struck down, the problem of abortion has gotten worse because they're now sending, abortion pills right directly to people's homes. So that teenage girl wants to have an abortion, she can go online, get an abortion pill sent directly to her. And so the site of the murder is her bathroom. We need to help. And we have to help those girls. We have to help the moms who think they're alone. They're not alone. The Ministry of Preborn is working for them every day. First of all, they save the baby at least double the chance of life by showing the mom an ultrasound. When the mom sees an ultrasound, the chances double that she'll choose life. They've already rescued over 280,000 babies through this love, compassion, and free ultrasound. They do it every day. They rescue about 200 babies every single day. And they also offer assistance to the mom for up to 2 years after that baby is born, so she no longer feels alone. She has somebody she can turn to, somebody who actually loves her and her baby. I am proud to partner with Preborn. They are helping change the world in the best possible way. And hopefully the Lord will look down with favor upon those who participate, please stand up. One life-saving ultrasound is $28. Donate securely at preborn.com, or you can hit #250 and say the keyword baby. #250, keyword baby, or preborn.com/Glenn. So I've been talking about the disinformation primer. It's a report created for internal use only by USAID, the U.S. Agency for International Development. The document came to light through a FOIA request and a lawsuit by America First Legal. These guys are fantastic. Anyway, eventually, the primer admits that, quote, there is an inherent contradiction between the democratic ideal of free speech and the regulation of online content. You don't say. But just a few paragraphs later, the report says that since disinformation is such a wicked problem, I've never seen a government document use the word wicked. Such a wicked problem, government may need to come up with some new ways to regulate, meaning censor speech, like using co-regulatory models, or put another way, public-private partnerships. Then the primer quotes a policy paper from the Brookings Institution, which says, quote, to effectively manage disinformation and related online problems, governments and platforms will need to develop an architecture to promote collaboration and build trust among stakeholders. The Brookings paper touts something called the Global Internet Forum to counter terrorism, an NGO working to prevent terrorists and violent extremists from exploiting digital platforms. Remember, we have now been called terrorists. Moms and dads have been called extremists for standing up in their school board meeting. So we're not talking about traditional terrorists or extremists. This NGO was founded by Facebook, Microsoft, YouTube, and X, the former Twitter. Well, Microsoft, Facebook's parent company, Meta, and Google are all major donors to the Brookings Institution. So maybe it's not a shock that Brookings would recommend government teaming up with companies to regulate free speech. And as we've seen from Murthy versus Missouri Supreme Court case, this is exactly the type of collaboration the Biden administration has been engaged in. Every week, it seems like we learn more details about the scope of Team Biden's censorship efforts. Earlier this year, you may recall a shadowy nonprofit I told you about called the Center for Countering Digital Hate. It was founded in 2017 by a British guy named Imran Ahmed. He was a former advisor to Labour Party members of the British Parliament. Ahmed now has opened a branch of CCDH in Washington, D.C. Current and past board members of this group have multiple connections to the British government. Their work includes urging Google to demonetize sites like Zero Hedge and The Federalist. The group came to our attention earlier this year when it accused me of climate change denial in one of its reports. I don't deny climate change. What I do deny is that we should spend $50 trillion or more on ideas that I don't think work. The CCDH kind of sounds like a British version of Media Matters. Well, during its investigation of the Biden administration's censorship efforts, American First Legal uncovered documents which they released last week verifying that the Center for Digital Hate met directly with officials from the White House and the State Department's Bureau of Counterterrorism. In 2022, the CCDH submitted its research and policy recommendations to the White House Task Force to address online harassment and abuse. In their submission, CCDH said it had, quote, studied the way anti-vaccine extremists, hate actors, climate change deniers, that would include me now, I guess, and misogynists weaponize platforms to spread lies and attack marginalized groups. Through our work, we have seen the depth and breadth of harm that each tech company profits from on a daily basis. 6 months later, the White House Task Force issued a sweeping blueprint for action, including digital equity grants, whatever the heck those are, and Department of Education guidance to be issued to colleges, among other things. So why is the Biden White House taking policy advice from a foreign-based NGO that is dedicated to censoring its ideological opponents? If America knew about this, I'm sure most of them would not be okay with left-wing activists from Britain giving their definition of terrorism to our State Department's Bureau of Terrorism. Let me flip that around. Let's say the president is a Republican. Would you be okay with that if you're a liberal? I wouldn't be okay with it if it was a Republican president. You shouldn't be okay with it if it's a liberal president. That government net that I talked about earlier just keep getting stretched wider and wider and wider. And it's not like the American left needs any help redefining terms like terrorist or extremist and hate. They're rushing off the deep end just fine on their own. USAID's disinformation primer endorses targeting advertisers as a means of shutting down the online speech that they don't like. This is something that was really perfected by Media Matters. And it is really unconstitutional if the government is involved at all. And it's all done in the name of stopping disinformation to keep you safe. That's all they're doing. Financial blacklisting is a growing trend in the global censorship effort. It have happened in the 1950s with the communists, and it was wrong then. It is wrong now. In the U.S. Treasury Department's Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, they sent an email to the heads of major U.S. banks. In it, they showcased a report titled Bankrolling Bigotry, an overview of the online funding strategy of American hate groups. This report includes mainstream conservative Christian organizations like the Alliance Defending Freedom, the Family Research Council, and many others. The report urges online platforms to cut off the ability of these so-called hate groups to raise money. Let that sink in for a second. A division of the U.S. Treasury Department that helps prosecute financial crimes endorsed a hate group list to major U.S. banks, including Wells Fargo, Citibank, J.P. Morgan Chase, Bank of America, and others. You can see where this is trending. It is only a matter of time until allowing conservative organizations to use banking services gets labeled as a financial crime. This has been done to groups before, and it never ends well. I beg Democrats who have not lost their mind to this leftist insanity to please heed the warning of history. One of the groups that created the Bankrolling Bigotry Report is a UK-based think tank called the Institute for Strategic Dialogue. In 2021, it received a grant from the U.S. State Department to this foreign actor to, quote, advance the development of promising and innovative technologies against disinformation and propaganda. And big surprise, ISD frequently labels basic conservative viewpoints as hateful and/or disinformation. Just as an example, it labeled the Libs of TikTok Twitter account as a prolific spreader of hate. How? It is only reposting things that were posted on TikTok. Man, it must be nice to make sweeping pronouncements like that and be considered an expert and watch the government grants roll in. Another author of Bankrolling Bigotry, the Global Disinformation Index, is also based in the UK, and it is also known for its efforts to demonetize conservative news sites. In 2022, it ranked U.S. news sites with the lowest and highest levels of disinformation risk. And brace yourself for this, somehow all of the highest disinformation risks were sites that were conservative. We are up against a sprawling network of government agencies, think tanks, the largest companies in the world, all collaborating in multiple ways with your tax dollars for the same end goal, to censor, unapproved speech. I'll be right back with one last takeaway from the disinformation primer that encapsulates all of it, the conflict over our fundamental rights. Now that we are launching into general election season, Patriot Mobile wants to celebrate with a special offer just in case you haven't made the switch yet. Until this weekend, March 31st, you can get a free month of service when you switch to Patriot Mobile. All you need to do is stop procrastinating, go to patriotmobile.com, use the offer code SPRING24. You know, I don't know what it is with the conservatives of this country, but they won't spend a dime. Sorry, I almost swore. They haven't spent a dime when you have the left like Soros spending billions. But what do? Well, we have to have people like Patriot Mobile come up with something they can sell and then use a percentage of that to start donating to things that will actually protect our Constitution. We're in the fight of our life. Have you switched your mobile carrier yet? Please do. They'll give you access to all three major networks, which means you get the same coverage that you're accustomed to, and you're not funding the left. You're funding those things that will uphold the Constitution. Please, please switch. It's the lowest hurdle. PatriotMobile.com/Beck or call 972-PATRIOT. 972-PATRIOT. Make sure you use the offer code SPRING24. One last quote I want to mention from the disinformation primer. It says, and I quote, "Human rights advocates have argued that internet access is a human right, that there is a fundamental right to access of information, but there is also a right not to be disinformed." Oh my gosh, there's so much to unpack there. Now, this fits right in with a philosophy that has plagued America for over a century, ever since progressives decided that science and government can work together and march us right in to utopia. I think they honestly believe that if they put enough resources, tech companies, think tanks, government agencies together, that they can destroy everything that's wrong with the world. But even if they could, how much constitutional free speech would they destroy in the process? Sorry, but there is no fundamental right for the access to the internet. There is no right to not be disinformed, because those are positive liberties, meaning things that the government has to do for you. Listen to this classic clip from an interview with Barack Obama in 2001.
"The Constitution is a charter of negative liberties, says what the states can't do to you, says what the federal government can't do to you, but it doesn't say what the federal government or the state government must do on your behalf."
So when people say, yeah, there's a constitutional right for access to the internet, no, that's a positive right. Our Bill of Rights, negative liberties, and they're a good thing. They restrain government from doing certain things. We need those restraints on government because the trend of history all over the world forever is never toward more liberty for the individual. Today, there is an urge to add positive liberties as fundamental rights: healthcare, housing, reparations, minimum income, etc., etc. Trying to transform our Constitution into a charter of positive liberties. It's a century-old project. Progressives have been doing this. FDR contributed to this in his 1941 State of the Union speech, in which he introduced his famous four freedoms. The first two were freedom of speech and expression, and freedom of every person to worship God in his own way. No, it's to practice religion, okay? Kind of the first two were right. Not because FDR declared them freedoms, of course, but because they're already enshrined, a clear definition of them, in the First Amendment. But his second two, freedom from want and freedom from fear, are completely inaccurate. The problem with those is they put the government in the position of having to feed you or having to make sure that you're not afraid. So to secure those guarantees, government must exercise power. For example, with freedom from want, the government would have to provide citizens with a certain level of income. Where does that come from? You, the taxpayer. Guess who had more positive liberties in its constitution than any other nation on earth? Yes, the Soviet Union, whose 1936 constitution became known as the Stalin Constitution. Soviet citizens were supposedly guaranteed from freedom of assembly to paid vacations. And yet, Stalin's purges and executions skyrocketed in the years after that constitution became law. How's that possible? The Soviet Union gave them so many rights. Because there was no constitutional check on centralized communist power. The central party had control over essentially all aspects of everyone's life. When you look at our First Amendment, the right to worship, speech, press, assembly, to petition the government, those are independent rights, meaning they're not dependent on anyone or anything else to make them happen. Positive liberties like the right to internet access, the right not to be disinformed, require someone else to step in, namely, usually a faceless government organization. The more utopian the vision, the more government power is required to implement that vision. And we should not, none of us, left or right, want giant government to have that kind of power. The constant refrain from the left now is that they want to save democracy, but that's not what they're doing. That's a siren call to dash your actual fundamental rights, the Bill of Rights, against the rocks. If you truly believed in democracy, you wouldn't be afraid of different perspectives on COVID or climate change or anything like that. This is so important because if we fail at this, we will lose our essential liberties. Our essential right to be informed by people who disagree with the government or to disagree ourselves. This November is extraordinarily important. Pray on it. From the Mountain West, good night, America.